Please silence all electronic devices.
Representatives Brawley, Sain, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soka are recognized.
So the bottom line is, folks, there are a lot of bad people out there.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
You're fired!
You know, the guy that used to sit in this chair had a saying, if you think everybody's good, you ain't met everybody.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the American Tobacco Campus in downtown Durham, it is Tuesday, September 26th, 2017. Welcome to WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Today, an update on the happenings of North Carolina's U.S. Senators Burr and Tillis, as well as what is perhaps the latest diversion from President Trump. Joining us from the U.S. Capitol is Washington Times national security reporter Dan Boylan. Daniel, welcome back to the podcast.
Jeff, I appreciate that. I like to keep in touch with my North Carolina roots and try and tell folks back there how folks are getting on up here.
All right. Tell me, as we begin, where exactly are you right now? You're within the confines of Congress, yes?
Right now, I'm on the third floor on the House side of the U.S. Capitol. If you face the Capitol from the back side, the left-hand side is the House, and the right-hand side is the Senate. So I'm just above to the right of the House floor, actually, in the press gallery.
All right. Congress is obviously in right now, a flurry of activity. I think the legislative branch, the executive branch, been relatively quiet on the federal judiciary front right now, but the U.S. Supreme Court will be back within the next week, I believe. Let's begin with Richard Burr and perhaps what might be coined some renewed intestinal fortitude this week. Russia, Bob Mueller, Facebook, what's the latest?
Yeah, I think that Richard Burr has stood out here in the last couple of months for someone who at the beginning of the year was reticent to really get his hands dirty on these Russia probes. He is the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. The Senate Intelligence Committee is the most serious committee investigating these potential ties between the Trump administration and the Kremlin. Was there collusion? Was there obstruction of justice? Or was all this stuff made up by Hillary's people? Whatever the answer is, Richard Burr's committee, which he's co-chairing with Senator Mark Warner out of Virginia, is the lead committee on that. And as I mentioned there, he had some initial reluctance to get involved in something that's so politically kryptonite, a difficult issue, however you touch it. He's shown some intestinal fortitude, though, in the last couple of months by, I would say, trying to make this more about the investigation and less about the daily headlines that swirl around it, which has been very hard to do here in Washington, because at times, some of the folks who've come up to testify would take the aggressive approach by releasing their testimony before they actually testified and trying to take control of the headlines. And last week, to conclude here this point, a longtime Trump lawyer, Michael Cohen, tried this, and the Senate Intelligence Committee actually then decided not to have him testify. So it was really seen as a sign that, wow, these guys are taking control of the committee and have something to say.
Any new public developments in the investigation this week, or has it all been behind closed doors?
A lot of behind closed doors stuff. Today in the House Intelligence Committee hearing, there was Roger Stone, who is a longtime Trump confidant. He's somebody who tried to draft Trump, actually, into presidential politics back in the 80s. He also was involved in... There were allegations that he was somehow involved possibly in hacking the DNC's servers, which released thousands of emails that were posted on WikiLeaks, which showed Democratic Party acrimony between the Clinton camp and then-candidate Bernie Sanders. Roger Stone came in today and said that he denied having anything to do with that, and that any of his correspondence with some of these hackers was innocuous. So there's that. The other big one that Richard Burr has been pushing on with Senator Mark Warner is Facebook. And you've probably heard about ads that were floating around. I certainly remember some in North Carolina last year, odd ads that people say were these ads were possibly directly a result of a Kremlin disinformation campaign to confuse voters.
Right. And you're leading me perfectly into the next question I've got in front of me, which is, over the last 24, 48 hours, I'm hearing, seeing, reading rumblings about possible regulation of social media, specifically Facebook. My understanding of this is there are likely a number of additional steps that would have to take place before the FCC would even potentially intervene here or have some sort of oversight or influence over Facebook and how it disseminates and communicates information. But what's your take on possible government guidelines for Facebook?
It's a major issue, and at its heart is a very, very simple issue, which is for decades and decades, the political media space on television was regulated. There were efforts to really regulate what political ads could be. They could be negative, but it was pretty easy for the FEC to watch what the ads were. They then got into this thing about 10 years ago where people had to identify whether you supported the message or not. I'm Jeff DeBerry, and I support this message. You know, that type of stuff folks always had. Facebook was just a sea of sort of just this dirty sea of disinformation where no one checks anything. So it, in a sense, it's probably high time that it was required because our elections are fragile, and as we know, foreigners can – the United States at times influences elections overseas. That's what the State Department does, right? That's what U.S. policy often is. So the Russians turned around and seemed to try to do that here, and nobody could identify who these ads were paid for by. That's the issue.
So what do you think happens from here? With a Republican Congress, I imagine there are going to be plenty of lawmakers who don't want to further extend government and perhaps get involved with social media. At the same time, as you mentioned, it might be high time for this.
It could be, and I think this brings us back to Richard Burr's, that I think it could be high time for this because what was exposed was how fragile our media space is and how interconnected and how global it is at this point. And from what I can tell here, there's a House Intelligence Committee that's full of acrimony and fighting, and it's very political. But the Senate Intelligence Committee, and it seems to be because Richard Burr and Mark Warner really have this bipartisan, they've got a pretty unified approach to it. It feels like what they're going to try and do, and they're trying to get their report out and their conclusions out by the end of the year, is focus their findings on the fact that these are bad things that happened with the Russians, and this is possibly how we protect ourselves going forward. And I believe it's going to be much less about this was what the Trump administration maybe did or didn't do. I believe it's really going to be much more, look, there were 21 states that were potentially hacked. Here are recommendations. Facebook is a problem. Here are recommendations. And I think that will be a positive outcome of this nasty and messy Russia meddling investigations.
All right. You talk about the way Senator Richard Burr has handled all of this and his role on the Senate Intelligence Committee. 30 seconds or less before we move on. Is this his Sam Ervin moment, in your opinion, or is that not a fair comparison?
Yeah, I think it is. It's a moment that he's, as I say, he was sort of, he reluctantly stepped into this real nasty mud fight. And has proven to be somebody who's willing to get involved in it, and he's been pretty methodical. At times, being a reporter, when you talk to his folks, you think, my God, they're telling me nothing, you know, and that's always frustrating, as you know. On the other hand, you think, actually, they're being pretty calm, and they're trying to focus on the larger picture here, which is what did Russia do, and how can we fix it so it doesn't happen again?
All right. Meanwhile, North Carolina's junior senator, Republican Tom Tillis, filed a bill to shield special counselor, prosecutor Bob Mueller, but it is stuck at the moment. Tell us a little bit about what that was and where it is.
Yeah, there are two bills that were floated here that were written towards the end of the summer when there was still so much light and heat around this idea that the president might possibly fire special counsel Robert Mueller. Just for background for our listeners out there, Robert Mueller came in to take over the Department of Justice's investigation of Russia and Trump possible collusion after Mr. Trump fired James Comey, the FBI director, only the second director in the 102-year history of the FBI to ever be fired. So there were thoughts that, oh my gosh, is the president going to possibly fire Mueller to sweep that under the table? And what that would mean for a grand crisis for rule of law. So these two bills were written. One of them would have made a three-judge panel hear the explanation as to why the firing occurred after the firing, within 2 weeks, and the other one would have been before it. Whoever was the head DOJ, Department of Justice official who would actually oversee the firing would have to explain why they were doing the firing before they did it. Senator Tillis I think that his was they're almost mirror images of each other, the way that you need this panel. But these bills today actually were caught in the Senate Judiciary committee, and Chairman Chuck Grassley from Iowa thought that they may be unconstitutional. So they seem to be having a hard time getting out of committee, which is interesting.
I'm not sure where to go next. What do you expect? So you expect something substantive.
Earplug. Jeff, I sometimes think that what I experience over here is when you said you're not sure where to go next, earplugs.
Okay.
And then just sit and hold your breath for a while and then, you know, take the earplugs out and try again.
Noted. You're on a relatively tight deadline, so I want to pivot one more time. We're chatting with Dan Boylan from The Washington Times. He's a national security reporter, formerly of the NC Insider, and also a journalist in Indonesia and other pockets of the world. So you've seen various messaging. You've seen different political posturing and positioning. And I want to get your perspective on the president as it pertains to the demonstrations that we saw last Sunday. You know, this had been, you know, half a dozen NFL players who are getting some attention for taking a knee or doing something during the national anthem. And this past Sunday, largely in response to the comments that Trump made about players being SOBs for not standing during the anthem, there were widespread protests, right? More than 200 players. I don't want to talk about the protests so much. I want to talk about what I viewed as a diversion, a distraction. And to me, there were a number of monumental things going on, right?
Right.
I mean, we had the Graham Cassidy healthcare bill. Mm-hmm. There's this potential humanitarian issue in Puerto Rico. You've got everybody's new favorite Rocket Man over at the 48th parallel. You talk about the situation with North Korea. North Korea saying the United States has made a declaration of war.
Right.
You've got what's going on with Russia or isn't going on. I mean, you've got this investigation. There are all these pretty big things. You also have the special election in Alabama that's taking place today as we're talking.
Right.
My question to you, spitting it out here, is from your perspective, was the president calculated in what he did here to move the conversation back toward this social divisive argument that's clearly in his wheelhouse? How much of a puppeteer, how much of a master manipulator of the press is he, from your vantage point, specifically to the last week or so?
Yeah, I think that folks around the country would probably rather hear about an infrastructure package to rebuild airports and schools and roads and bridges.
You think they would? You think the American people would rather hear about transport than debate Confederate monuments? Or
I think they would, but I think that the problem is to be able to pull off that type of politics requires the type of politicians that today's media environment kind of chew up and eat out, right? That
fair.
It's really hard to be a positive politician talking in this country about infrastructure. And it's much easier just to inflame people's hatreds and just distract them from the fact that government is really big and expensive in this country. So to pull off big, expensive things, you really have to be a master politician. And I think it's sometimes a showing of people who are, they have short-term gains by distracting everyone. But in the end, people look back and history look back and says, man, that they were missing the boat on what a democratically elected, you know, legislatures are supposed to do, and democratically elected presidents are supposed to, in theory, improve the society. So,
but politicians by nature are gonna distract, right? What about the press? How much blame, if any, do you put on the press for running with this red meat?
Yeah, I think that the press is certainly a real problem here because of our need for deadlines every 22 seconds. People don't slow down. I think that one fact that I heard this weekend was that the national anthem, players haven't been even on the field for the national anthem. It only started in about 2009. So mm-hmm. It's a very recent tradition. You know, the U.S. military, the DOD has also worked to increase patriotism by holding hands with the NFL really over the last 10 years as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And when you start to play with these forces, these grand forces of patriotism, they become, they're very hard for one individual to control. And I think what you and I were having a discussion before we got online here today about HB2 last year, and that really galvanized the fringes of both the left and the right in North Carolina. And those at the center had a very hard time controlling the story. And it got out of control, right?
Absolutely. And that to be fair, that's a social issue. That's a culture war item, right? But it happened in one state. And I think to your point, I mean, you're talking about giant in spectacle demonstrations across the country. This is beyond anybody. Well, let me ask the question. Is this beyond anybody having control over it? Or I'll go back to my question. Do you think that Trump is some sort of savant in this area where he might still be able to manipulate and control or steer the collective us onto something else?
Yeah, it's really tricky. You know, I think that he showed himself in Charlottesville that when we were having discussions about it up here, the idea was that race is much larger than President Donald Trump. It always will be and always has been in this country. It's bigger than any one president.
Sure. Yeah.
And if you kind of put your head up in the middle of it, it's likely your head's just going to get smashed off. And certainly he appealed to a small portion of his base in his comments about, you know, the South and the Confederacy, but it didn't seem like he appealed to a broad cross-section of the United States. I think in this case, too, a lot of people scratch their heads saying, hold on, you know, what does the anthem really have to do with, you know, one guy from San Francisco didn't want to get up. I really don't care. My kids, you know, my health insurance is stinky, and it's not sunny today, and I'd like to have a good meal tonight. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think it's one of these things that the president appeals to people's kind of low brain, primordial snake brain, when he could be appealing to people's higher brain on some of these things. And I think he tried to do it a few weeks ago with the transgendered issue in the military, and the military, I think, was too smart, and they just said, listen, if people want to fight, they fight, you know? So this is a funny issue because we're going to see how it plays, because it's also an issue that if you dig into it, you get some understanding, and you realize, yeah, a couple guys don't want to stand up for the anthem because of Black Lives Matter. And they get paid well. So what? They have short careers anyway. Most of them don't end up that rich anyway. You know,
right,
they're playing
right.
a gladiators game on Sunday yeah. afternoon to, you know, people don't fight in the streets anymore on Sunday afternoon. They go and sit in their living room and watch TV instead. You know, what's better? You know what I mean?
I do.
Mean, you're playing with issues
right.
of masculinity in society that are pretty wild at this point, and they're very hard to control.
Throw you on the spot. You've spent, I don't know how many countries you've been to. I would guess you've probably been to 15 or 20 countries in your life. If you have been to sporting events abroad, do you have a recollection of whether or not the national anthem was played in Japan before a baseball game or in Indonesia before a cricket match, perhaps, or other sporting events? What kind of patriotism do you remember seeing in conjunction with these large sporting spectacles?
Yeah, I mean, that when people do Muay Thai boxing in Bangkok, and I used to do a lot of work in Indonesia, when the fighters come into the ring, somebody plays an old-fashioned drum and an old-fashioned, almost one of those flutes that sounds like a snake-charming flute, and they play a song to rid the ring of the demons so that the men can have a pretty fair shot at each other. So, you know,
so more spiritual than national, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. You know, and then you think about the Olympics or the World Cup where those things are brought up to remind people of where they're from. And I think it's a very positive thing, the national anthem. And I think people should stand for it. We also have got a First Amendment in this country. And, you know, if somebody doesn't want to stand for the national anthem, I don't think that means they're disrespecting troops. I've worked with the Defense Department all around the world. So, you know, people have a right to their own opinion. That's kind of why you fight wars, so that we can have our own opinion in this country.
We'll leave it there. Dan Boylan is a national security reporter for The Washington Times. He's been on the podcast before. I imagine we may just do this again. Dan, thanks for coming on.
Jeff, I appreciate it, and take care to all the listeners, good listeners out there in North Carolina.
Well, sometimes I go.
And, of course, thank you for listening to this episode of the WUNC Politics Podcast. If you've listened before or if this is the first time, you can give us a rating on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. You can also stay up to date with political news at our website, WUNC.org. Next week, I'm on vacation, no podcast. For Dan Boylan, I'm Jeff Tiberi. Have a good week. Won't you come on over?